At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. As always, alongside me, former NFBC main event champion, Dylan White. What's going on, dude? How are you this week?
Not too bad. Maybe I'll be the 2025 draft champions overall champion.
Yeah,
and we're going to...
Yeah, exactly. We're going to talk a little bit of that on today's show. Dylan just completed his draft not too long ago. We had talked about it on the last episode a couple of weeks back, so we're going to kind of fill you back in. On the last episode, we, of course, had talked quite a bit about the initial build. I think at that point, you were maybe up to like round 20.
Yeah.
Just about halfway through. You're now completed. Big picture. How do you feel you did? And kind of walk us through your build as you got, you know, past round 20 to some of the later rounds, where you feel you have depth and where you don't. For those unfamiliar, the draft champions format, 15 teams, roto scoring, it's 50 man rosters. It's just a single draft. There are no in-season trades. There are no in-season ads or drops, waiver wires, any of that. You draft your team. That is your team. So you need to have that depth to fill out your roster each week. Really, really fun format. One that I've played the most myself of all the NFBC games. I actually haven't played anything but this on NFBC. And then maybe a best ball, whatever those are called. They might've done one or two of those at some point, but overall, I really like this format. I think it's a lot of fun. So Dylan, without further ado, walk us through your approach and kind of your big picture thoughts and kind of strategy, all that stuff.
Yeah. So like you said, it's 50 players on your roster. So 14 hitters, 9 pitchers, and then it's 27 man bench. So generally what you want is kind of a, like a 50-50 split, maybe, with hitters and pitchers, just so you always have options every week when you make your lineup changes. So it's weekly lineups for pitchers, semi-weekly for hitters. You do Monday to Thursday and then Friday to Sunday. So the general strategy I have is you have backups for every position, at least one. For outfielders, we have 5 outfielders on your main roster. I want at least, you know, 5 outfielders on the bench. Maybe even more, depending on who I want in my utility. And then another thing is prospects are obviously a big part of this, because, you know, when someone comes up, like a Paul Skeens last year, even though their projection may not be that great when they are playing for the brief time they're playing, maybe Skeens is a bad example because he pitched for pretty much the whole year. But someone who comes up near like the last month, like Junior Caminero, who only kind of played in the last month, you get his stats for that month, right? So you want to, there's a strategy of how you pick up a guy who's only going to play half the season. Like someone who's going to have 30 home runs on the year, that's generally like 6 home runs a month, 5 home runs a month. So if you get a guy who hits 5 home runs a month in the final month, he's basically the same kind of production, if you know what I'm saying, to like a 30 home run hitter. So there's a lot of strategy in trying to figure out where you put in these like injured guys or these prospect guys. So I think maybe I'll just go down my list of like each position of like who I ended up taking up as backups.
Sure.
So my catchers, my 2 main catchers are Salvador Perez, who also has first base eligibility, and Gabriel Moreno. I was torn in the 16th round between Moreno and Alejandro Kirk, who I really like this year. To have a nice bounce back season. He kind of picked it up at the end of the year. Danny Jansen's no longer with the team, so Kirk's going to get a lot of playing time, I believe. So I was torn between Moreno and Kirk in the 16th. I ended up taking up Moreno, and then Kirk didn't go until like the 25th round. So I should have waited and just taken Kirk. So those are my 2 catchers. And then my backups, I ended up with Victor Caratini. I just wanted someone who kind of has, who will get, you know, 300 plate appearances. And then I have Moises Ballesteros as my fourth catcher. I like him with his catcher eligibility. He'll be up with the Cubs. Roboscott always liked him. There are a lot of good kind of prospect catchers available. Moises Ballesteros, Dalton Rushing, Drake Baldwin now is a good option now that Travis d'Arnaud's option wasn't picked up by the Braves. I don't know if I said Agustin Ramirez. A lot of good catchers who are good options. I like Ballesteros. He's kind of the cheapest, but I think he's kind of on par with those guys I mentioned generally on a per plate appearance basis. So those are my catchers. My first base and third base, the corners. I have Bryce Harper, Nathaniel Lowe, and Austin Riley, who I mentioned last week. And then so my backups at first base, I have Juan Yepez of the Nationals, who I like. He should get some good playing time, probably in the middle of the order. So he's a good backup. Sal Perez actually has first base, as I mentioned, so he can fill in a pinch at first base. My third base backups to Austin Riley are Ernie Clement of the Jays, who had a nice little season. I'm looking at 15 home runs, 15 stolen bases. He also has shortstop eligibility, so I like that. And I took Miguel Vargas, who I'm hoping to have a nice bounce back for the White Sox with full-time playing time after leaving the Dodgers. He was a RoboScout favorite for the last couple of years and actually had a pretty good year in AAA. Miguel Vargas did. So I'm looking for him to have a nice bounce back, even though he had a pretty bad season for the White Sox after he was traded. And then my final backup there is Zach McKinstry. So like these fourth options at these positions aren't the greatest, as you can see, but you know, you just kind of want a body to make sure you're not taking a zero. That's what happened to one of my DCs last year. I've mentioned it many times. I had Tristan Casas, Joey Gallo, Jose Abreu, and Ryan Noda. And so I was taking zeros for like over a month. And if we had six RBIs for that month from just a body, we would have moneyed. So I've learned my lesson. I'd never want to take a zero. So that's what you'll see there. So my middle infield, I've got Gunnar Henderson, who is my number one pick at shortstop. I got Jeremy Pena behind him. I got Xander Bogaerts as my second baseman, who also has shortstop eligibility. And my backups are Christian Campbell of the Boston Red Sox. Really like his chances to play a lot with the team. Minor league player of the year. Power and speed, good batting average. It doesn't matter even if he doesn't start the season in the majors, because I kind of already have it covered. But once he comes up, you know, I'm looking to have good production from him. I also took Nolan Gorman as a backup second baseman. I'm looking for him to be a bounce back. I think if he got to 600 plate appearances, he would have, you know, 25 to 30 home runs. So that's good. He probably won't get 600 plate appearances, but when he does play, you know, he should have power and he's still young. I think he's 24 still. So I'm looking for a bounce back there. My final second baseman is Caleb Durbin of the Yankees. He's rule five eligible. So the Yankees either have to protect him or he may get drafted and then he'll probably play. He's on the verge of setting stolen base record at the ASL right now. I think it's to break his own record from last year, maybe. I think he has 22 stolen bases and the next highest person in the AFL is like 9. Nice utility. He's playing shortstop right now, but he'll probably play second or even outfield. I think he's played some center field as well. Just a utility player. He'll get on base, steal some bases, and, you know, has some pop too. So I like Caleb Durbin. I like the fact that he's probably going to get playing time just because he's rule five and he'll have to be either protected and added to the 40 or drafted and be on the roster. So I like that. My backup shortstops to Gunnar Henderson and Jeremy Pena. So Bogaerts has shortstop eligibility. So he's there too. Ernie Clement, I mentioned earlier, he's got it. So I've got him there. And then Zach McKinstry also has shortstop. So I got a lot of guys with the multi-positional eligibility to help fill in, because that's another, I think that's an undervalued trait in DCs especially, is the multi-position eligibility. Just again, so you don't take a zero, you always have coverage. Outfield. So my I took Randy Arozarena, Stephen Kwan, and Jason Dominguez as my top three outfielders for the 20th. And then I took Jung-Hoo Lee as well in the 18th, actually. I forgot about that. And so my fifth outfielder was Matt Wallner. And I'm a bit worried about that because he is a platoon bat, strong side platoon. So, you know, you can never have no holes in a DC. I think that's what you find. Steve Weimer on James's RotoWire podcast was talking about how it's kind of a game of whack-a-mole. Like you think, oh, I'm weak at catcher, so you take a catcher. And then you're like, okay, I need speed. And so you take speed. And then you're like, okay, now I'm behind on pitching. And so you're it's constant whack-a-mole trying to fill the gaps. So I think that this is kind of one of my biggest holes here is Matt Wallner is my fifth outfielder. It could pay off. He could have 25 home runs.
At worst, I'll say I had Wallner in that DC this year, and it was nothing. But once you're fifth outfielder, it's like you should have probably three or four other options potentially there.
Exactly. So I went,
in the first half, and then Wallner, like in the second half, like we almost rode into winning that league. We ended up coming in second, but he was tremendous in the second half. So maybe you'll just get like a full good season of Wallner, or maybe you just get a tremendous half. You can't drop him. So he's going to be there if he gets hot.
He's going to be there. Yeah. We had Wallner in our main event that won, and his price went up for last year, 2024. And so we ended up not getting him anywhere. And then, like you said, he had the terrible first half. He was sent down, and then he came back up and crushed. So I'm hoping when he's in the lineup, he's going to crush. Although he's a platoon bat, you know, we can mix and match a bit, put him in when it's like three righties on a Monday to Thursday, that type of thing. But because of that, because I feel I'm weak in outfield, I wanted to make sure that I had coverage. So I have Chase DeLauder as kind of my shot, my upside shot, who I think will have good average, sort of like 20 home run, 10 stolen base pace when he's in the lineup. Although there's injury risk, you know, again, it's mix and match. So when he's in the lineup, I can play him and he won't hurt me in basically any of the stats. So he's my upside play. And then I tried to get some guys who are going to get full-time playing time. So I got Alex Verdugo, wherever he's going to be. Jose Siri, who I hope will get playing time, bounce back for Tampa Bay. And because I'm a bit behind on stolen bases, I thought Siri was a good fit for this team. And then Kyle Isbell of the Royals. Those are kind of my main like playing time guys to backfill. And then Miguel Vargas has outfield, so he could always fill in there. Zach McKinstry also has outfield, so he can fill in there. And then my one shot that I like is Chandler Simpson.
I was going to ask you about this one. I thought that was interesting. So talk to me about taking that shot on Simpson there, because you said you were looking for speed. You get Simpson, couple of pitchers, Marsh, Phillips, strikeout upside there, of course. And then you go back to the Siri well, looking at Tampa Bay playing time and stolen base options. So talk to me a little bit about taking Chandler there, because that was a little bit of a shot. Like, just, I mean, it was round 36, so it's nothing insane. But there were some interesting players going there that are probably have major league roles. So talking about taking that shot and kind of what you see the upside being.
So I wanted Simpson from the beginning, just cause I think he's pretty cheap, for what he can give. Like, so Dairon Blanco on the Royals, although he doesn't play that often, he still steals bases. So if I need like three stolen bases in a week or something like that, like I was playing Dairon Blanco in my dynasty league in the final weeks because he was just stealing bases. He wasn't getting at bats. He wasn't hitting home runs, but he was pinch running, stealing bases and getting things. So at worst, I'm hoping Chandler Simpson will do that because he's in triple. He finished the season in AAA. He has good batting average, good contact. His projection is something like 280 to 290, which is pretty good. Like 60 stolen base speed. Like he is like a Dairon Blanco. He is like a Victor Scott. And he's on the verge. So I knew I was going to pair him with Jose Siri. So it's, if Siri's doing well, Simpson's probably not up. if Siri is doing terribly, or they send him down or they release him, Simpson's probably going to be up, notwithstanding any free agent signings that Tampa Bay has. So I just feel that like one of those two is going to be playing fairly regularly. I know Simpson's defense isn't the greatest, but it's not horrible from what I've seen in the metrics. I just kind of feel that it's like Tampa Bay does, as you know, does some unorthodox things. I could see them giving him some run. Jose Caballero had a very productive fantasy season. Despite kind of poor hitting, he stole like 50 bases. I could see him being valuable. And what I like about Simpson is the batting average. He's not like a Jose Siri, who will like have the Mendoza line and may have some counting stats. I think that Chandler Simpson doesn't hurt in batting average if I play him. So that's my hitting. My pitching, my top seven starters are Yoshinobu Yamamoto of the Dodgers, Spencer Schwellenbach of the Braves, who I really like, Carlos Rodon, Nathan Eovaldi, who is now a free agent after declining the option for the Rangers, Yu Darvish on the Padres, and Kumar Rocker and Matthew Boyd. So my backups, because that's not the greatest starting pitching, there's a bunch of risk. I got, you know, Eovaldi, Darvish are kind of older and there's some risk there. Matthew Boyd, same thing. And then Kumar Rocker has risk of, you know, maybe not getting the playing time if he starts off slow. I wanted to get, you know, a bunch of volume as well in my starter. So I have Yariel Rodriguez of the Blue Jays, who I really like for this year as well. I think he's underrated. They're going to cap him at about 130 to 140 innings, but I think they'll be productive innings. I think he'll have a sub four ERA, pretty good whip. I did like what I saw. Brant Herder, I took from the Tigers, who had a nice finish to the season. Doesn't blow you away, but he always has good ratios. Sean Burke, who also finished strong for the Chicago White Sox. I like that. He added some velocity. I wrote about him in RoboScout as well. And when he came up, I'm very pleased to see that he pitched quite well. Albert Suarez, Baltimore Orioles, very high IVB fastball, kind of a revelation in spring training. We ended up taking him in a couple leagues and he did quite well for the Orioles. I'm hoping he'll kind of do the same. Alec Marsh, the Royals, who you mentioned, Connor Phillips for strikeout upside. I don't really have too many high hopes for Connor Phillips. He's doing quite well in the AFL right now, but you know, if you can get strikeouts, maybe they put him in the bullpen and he ends up being the closer by the end of the year. Miles Michaelis, who's kind of the antithesis of these guys, where he's just, it's volume, and it's not really great anywhere, but you know, with the volume, maybe he'll get 10 wins, 150 strikeouts or so. I took Ryan Feltner of the Rockies, who, if you actually look at his away starts, he had a 125 whip and a sub four ERA. So he's someone I'll only play when he's away. I mean, this is not a novel strategy, but I kind of feel that there's an inefficiency where people aren't taking Rockies pitchers just because on the surface it looks so bad. But if you're mixing and matching, if you're only playing them in the away games, like mm-hmm. Herman Marquez or Kyle Freeland, Ron Feltner, these guys, I think you can get pretty good production for them. So, I mean, I'm not counting on him. He's like my SP 15 or whatever, but I think there'll be some weeks where I'll be using him for sure. I think I said Will Warren of the Yankees and then Chase Silseth, who I have a soft spot for on the Angels. And, you know, I think he could get, you know, 100 innings maybe in pretty good innings. And then my relievers. One of the things I find in these DCs is the last like four rounds, you can just pick and choose kind of what relievers you want to take shots at. Like Sir Anthony Dominguez didn't get picked till the very end, like Chris Martin, Ryan Pressly, these guys all went late. So you kind of have your choice of who you want. So I have Mason Miller and Ben Joyce as my two main closers. I took Trevor McGill, who I think will become the closer if Devin Williams is traded. And I think there's a very high chance of that. So I thought it was pretty cheap to get a closer who I think has like a 75% chance of being the closer in the second half, and should probably get at least 15 saves anyway. I took Tyler Kinley of the Rockies, who's kind of penciled in right now and roster resource as the closer. I'm always watching the Rockies because I always end up having a Rockies spec. I wanted Seth Halverson, who throws 100, but he got taken quite early, actually. So I don't mind getting Kinley in kind of the 46th round. And I took Michael Ohtañez in the 49th. He is who I think is the handcuff for Mason Miller in the A's. So my rationale is this. If Mason Miller's traded, or if Mason Miller, they announce that they're going to try him in the rotation, then Ohtañez's draft stock is going to go sky high. So now is the time in November, before any of that happens, that I'm getting this guy in the 49th round. And if those things happen where Mason Miller was traded, or they're saying he's going to be in the rotation, Ohtañez is going to jump into like the 20th round. So this is a pure like value play. And Ohtañez doesn't hurt with ratios or strikeouts either. So, I mean, I think there's a good chance Mason Miller gets injured, even if he stays as closer. And so this is I think this is a no-brainer for me in the 49th round, especially, that this Michael Ohtañez guy I'm going to have on all my teams if I can, unless me talking on this podcast is going to drive his price up. And then the 50th pick, my last pick, was AJ Minter. He has a hip injury, had some surgery. I think he's a free agent, too. He has always good ratios. I kind of feel he'll be like a handcuff to some team. Whether it's the Braves again to Rysell or not, I don't know. But I think, you know, maybe he'll be a closer for a month and I can get, you know, five saves from him. So
yeah, again, or maybe he ends up on a team it's a little murky and he finds his way into a job. It's totally possible. Right?
Exactly.
I think it's pretty good. We went through the entire DC at this point, kind of went over your strategy. You know, we talked through kind of not taking the zeros and making sure that you have enough depth. I think that's the biggest lesson, just, you know, going from a rookie player to someone who's cashed a couple of times, though I haven't won a league, so I can't talk with that much authority. But still, I think that's a big part of it, and making sure that, you know, I always tried to make sure that I had, you know, 8 available outfielders, 9 available outfielders, you know, this many pitchers, this many first basemen, second basemen, just before the draft, kind of penciling that out and making sure that we can check at least, you know, all of, but maybe one of those boxes. Sometimes you're one player short one place or another if you can't get those multi-position guys. But that being said, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some interesting pitching and hitting prospects for redraft, kind of an unofficial top 10 that Dylan has cobbled together. And we'll go back and forth on those. We'll be right back after this break. All right. And we're back. Baseball America Fantasy Podcast, Jeff Ponce, Dylan White. We just talked his draft champions on NFBC, one of the really, really early draft champions drafts that they did. Really interesting stuff there. But now we're going to jump in and we're going to talk some redraft prospects. So we're going to kind of stay in the same lane here. This is a very early list. We're going to be going into a ranking season within a couple of weeks now. We're going to go position by position again, kind of changing it up a little bit. You'll see what it is once it's released, with a hope of having pretty much all the position rankings out for you before Christmas. Then we'll have some bigger lists that come out in January. That's what the plan is at the moment. So make sure you stay tuned. If you're not subscribed to Baseball America, this is the best time of year to subscribe to Baseball America, because we got the top 10s dropping, which will be followed by the top 30s and the handbook, all great off-season content, and of course, all of our fantasy content as well. So make sure you check out some of that stuff. Dylan, let's go through the top 10 pitching prospects, if we may. What do you say?
Let's do it. Yeah. This kind of just was born out of looking at the ADPs and then like me trying to decide which prospects I wanted to take. So I just thought that since I had it in front of me and I was kind of very familiar with it, I would kind of put them into top 10, hitting and pitching. Basically this is for 2025 only. This is this year only. Obviously the way you'd rank them is playing time, who's going to get the most playing time, then who's going to be productive during that playing time. And then it's really like kind of double A guys or triple A guys or guys who had a taste last year. at the end. So like someone in high A, even like if someone like Travis Bezzana, even though if he does make it to the majors, he may be productive, just it may not be till September. And so like what he will contribute, I don't know if that'll be high enough. So all that was kind of considered in this top 10 list. So I don't know. How do you want to do it? Do you want to just want me to list them or
why don't you list off your top 10 and then we can talk through it?
So for pitchers, I started with Kumar Rocker. I think he's going to be in the rotation, at least 100 innings. And I think he'll have a sub-4 ERA. Number two, I had Andrew Painter of the Phillies. He was going to be in the rotation last year until he was, you know, injured. So I think he will get a lot of innings and I think he'll be good. Quinn Matthews of the Cardinals. I have number three. The Cardinals did not, they declined option of a lot of players. So it looks like Quinn Matthews, like Lance Lynn is no longer in the rotation, et cetera. So I think Quinn Matthews and Michael McGreevy are going to get a bunch of playing time. And I think they'll be fairly effective. I got Jackson Jobe at number four, which may be a bit controversial as one of the top pitching prospects. I just don't know how effective he'll be this year. Number five, Bubba Chandler of the Pirates. He should, you know, follow in the footsteps of Skeens and Jones. Maybe not as good, but, you know, I think he'll get good strikeouts and he'll be a very popular name. And I'll probably wish I had him. Will Warren I have as number six for the Yankees. He had a taste in the rotation this year. He really kind of turned the season around after starting off really poorly. He kind of fixed his mechanics, it looked like, because the shape of his slider changed. There was kind of a clear delineation, and after that, it was kind of more successful. So I'm expecting big things from Will Warren this year. The aforementioned Michael McGreevy Cardinals, I have number seven. I just, there's going to be a lot of volume. I think he's going to be in the rotation pretty much all year. He may not have the sexiest strikeout rates, but I think he'll have pretty good ratios. And like I said, he'll have volume. So he'll be productive. I got Logan Henderson of the Brewers, number eight. He was a Robo Scout favorite, primarily fastball, changeup, very good changeup. But just the projections are just great on him from Robo Scout. He's going to have like a sub-4 ERA. The Brewers could use some rotation help too. So I expect some big things. He finished in AAA. So I think he's going to be, he's going to probably throw 100 innings in the majors. I'm hoping. Caden Dana of the Angels, I have number nine. He got a taste in the majors last year. Yeah. So results. He's very young. The Angels need help. I'm just not so convinced he's going to be that great. But he's young, so he's a good dynasty asset. Just in 2025, I don't know if he's that good. So I have him at the back of the top 10 here. And then number 10, last but not least, I have Quinn Priester, former Pirate, who's pitching.
Not a prospect, though.
Not a prospect? Well, then no. I can move on from him and go to Brandon Sprout of the Mets.
Good, because he should have been ranked over him anyway.
I mean, I like what Priester did at the end of the year. He changed his mechanics, his release point and stuff. I really like that. I like what the Red Sox are doing. The Red Sox do need rotation help as well. So I thought that he would get an opportunity and I was just kind of hoping that, the changes I saw in the last couple months of the season would stick. So that's maybe not based on math. Yeah, it's more on feel that I like Priester.
Yeah, no shots at Priester there, whatsoever. Thought he was kind of interesting, not my cup of tea, but thought it was some interesting transformations. I know that you had covered some of those. I just wanted to make sure that you realized he was actually now a prospect.
I did not realize.
Yes, he is no longer prospect eligible, Dylan. Couple of names that kind of jumped to the top of my mind that I didn't see on the list. Sprout was one that I was going to ask you about. Another one that I notice is not listed is Rhett Lauder, who did debut last year. Reds certainly should have the openings in their rotation. Why no Rhett Lauder? Not saying he has to be top five, but why not him over someone like McGreevy, who's very similar, but probably a worse version. Will Warren, Logan Henderson, Dana, who didn't have as much success. Why did Louder fall short?
I didn't like what his production was like, and RoboScout wasn't a big fan either. Playing in Cincinnati as well, the ballpark's not great. He probably, I'd probably put him. I have him at 15 right now, just after Noah Schultz and Kate Horton, who are also high profile, but maybe they won't pitch that much in the majors, or there may be growing pains because they're so young. I wasn't blown away by Rhett Lauder, but he is in that like just off the top 10. I just like Michael McGreevy. Like I said, it's not a sexy profile. He's not going to get that many strikeouts, but he's kind of like a Kyle Hendricks. He's going to have like reasonable ratios. He's got good ground ball rate. He had success in the minors last year and success in the majors as well. So I kind of like that. And Logan Henderson, just he's far and away in RoboScout. His projection was so much better than Lauder's that for 2025, I just kind of feel that there's a better chance that he'll do better. As a dynasty asset, I think Rhett Lauder is obviously a better asset than Logan Henderson. I just feel that this year, I think.
Maybe not. But maybe not. We'll see. I think I would take Lauder over a couple of those guys. And I'm not the biggest Rhett Lauder fan. I just think he's very similar to McGreevy. And was tinkering with some different things throughout the season. Agree with you in terms of Quinn Matthews. Another name that I'll bring up is Thomas Harrington from the Pirates, not as maybe highly touted, of course, as Bubba Chandler. I think I would take him over Dana and Henderson and probably McGreevy and Warren. And I think he will get innings next year. It wasn't AAA for a good chunk at the end of the year. We've seen how aggressive they've been. And they just have pitching. They really do. It's the one thing that they developed really, really well. And I think Harrington is another guy that will keep the ratios low, gets enough strikeouts, but really commands the baseball well, changes shapes, changes eye levels, kind of moves the ball around the zone. I think he's going to be an effective starter. And the other one I was going to bring up was Justin Wroblewski from the Dodgers, who debuted last year as well, who's still rookie eligible. I don't know if he was in consideration whatsoever.
I have him in the top 30. I kind of extended this out to 30. I have Harrington actually at 16. I do agree with you. He's kind of like a Michael McGreevy. I just don't know if he's going to have as much volume as McGreevy. So that was kind of...
McGreevy eats a lot of innings.
So I just feel like if you're going to have a guy who's not going to blow you away with strikeouts, you want volume. And I think McGreevy beats him there. But I do like Harrington a lot for the Pirates as well. So who's the other names? Oh, yeah, Justin Wroblewski of the Dodgers. Yeah, he was in consideration. He's in the 30s. It's just more of the like the Dodgers, although this year... You can't really say that, but I think next year they're going to have a lot of arms back.
A lot of options.
Dustin May should be back. And who am I forgetting? Tony Gonsolin will be back. They won't have Gavin Stone. They won't have Emmett Sheehan, I don't think. They won't have River Ryan, but they have a lot of options. And so I'm just wondering, like, they're probably going to sign some free agents as well, right? So I just don't know what opportunity he's going to get, and then if it's going to be in the rotation, because if he's not good in the rotation, they're not going to keep him in there, right? They may move him to the bullpen, they may send him down. They had a short leash on Bobby Miller, so I don't know if they'd have a much longer leash for Justin Wroblewski. So I have
another name for you. I'll throw at you. What about Zebby Matthews?
Zebby Matthews, I didn't think. Qualified, but he
37.2 innings. He is
all right. Eligible. I would have him ahead of Will Warren. I'd have him sixth then after Bubba Chandler.
Yeah, at least by our eligibility, we don't go by days and all that nonsense, which is impossible to figure out. But he was another one that kind of came to mind for me. That I think could be a rotation option. Drew Thorpe, who I'm not a huge fan of, is still prospect eligible. Cade Horton is another name, depending on how healthy he is. He wasn't AAA. I'll also say this. I think that, and maybe this is a hot take, I might actually, you could convince me that Bubba Chandler is the number one pitching prospect to roster next year. I don't know. I don't think he necessarily goes one in terms of ADP, but by like June 1st, it might be like, oh crap, we should have all drafted Bubba Chandler way higher.
I don't think it's a hot take. I don't think it's a hot take at all.
I kind of feel that way. I think in terms of talent, it's Jobe, Painter, then Chandler. And I honestly think like Chandler and Painter is a real conversation that I could be convinced to put Chandler. It's a combination. I could be convinced to put Chandler above Painter. I honestly think could talk myself into having him one. I do think Quinn Matthews will be in the rotation next year. I prefer him to Kumar Rocker, actually. And I prefer him for 2025. I do prefer him to Andrew Painter. I think Painter is going to be maximum 100 innings. And some of it might be in the bullpen. And some of it might be like 4 or 5 inning starts. So there might be like that frustration factor with Painter where he's never going to go 6 innings, you know, even when he's cruising. I just don't know if we'll see that next year.
Yeah, I don't have any arguments against any of that.
That's some shutdowns where I think Quinn Matthews is poised to throw 150 innings next year. And I don't think that's crazy to think that he goes out there and throws 150 either. You look at, you know, what his track record is, he's going to be able to handle that. You could even convince me that he's the number one pitching prospect going into next year. Though I know it's a little bit safer than some of the upside guys. But I think I would have Chandler and Matthews probably as my 1-2, followed by Jobe and then Rocker. I still worry a little bit about the Kumar Rocker fastball shape. I think some of the same concerns I have with, like, shape and release that I have with Painter, I have with Rocker too, for sure. Almost maybe more so. Just that slider is so nasty that he can live off of it. And you know he's going to be in the rotation. So there's not a lot of risk there. And I don't know if there's an innings cap. They're just going to let Kumar throw as long as he can throw. Kind of seems like what the philosophy should probably be there. So that would be like some of the names that I'd suggest to throw in there. And some of maybe the way that I would order those guys out. Do you want to talk top 10 hitting prospects really quick? I think this is a little bit more straightforward, frankly.
Yeah, sure. I can.
List yours off.
Yeah, so basically same idea. It's opportunity, expected playing time, and then obviously production while playing. So I have number one, Christian Campbell of the Red Sox, basically a 1A, 1B with Roman Anthony of the Boston Red Sox. I don't know if I have to get into what I think they're going to do because we all know they're great. I just kind of feel Campbell have an advantage on stolen bases and may get more playing time. That's just my feel. Dalton Rushing I have number 3, catcher eligibility. So I really like that. And he should get at least 400 plate appearances. And if he gets outfield eligibility as well, just double value there. I have Christian Moore number 4. We had heard rumors and whispers that, you know, he might have been up at the end of the season last year if he didn't get injured. We know the Angels like to fast track their draft picks like Zach Neto and Nolan Chanuel. So this is a volume play, and I don't think he's going to hurt too much. And at second base with like 25 home run pop, that's valuable. Then I have Chase DeLauder, my guy I picked. Like I said, in when I was talking about my team, he's going to have, you know, like a 270 batting average, 20 home runs, 10 stolen base pace. So I like the batting average there. Number 6, I have Edgar Caro of the White Sox. I feel he'll be the main catcher. So it's a production thing. It's a plate appearance thing. Matt Shaw, 2020 eligibility, possibly playing, or 2020 potential, possibly playing second base if Nico Horner is out for the season, which is possible after his surgery. Even still, if he's not up for the whole season, he'll be up for quite a bit. So You know, I could see him moving up. I just have him a bit lower as a, just as a hedge on the playing time. Agustin Ramirez of the Marlins and Adrian Del Castillo of the Diamondbacks, both catchers who were excellent last year. Del Castillo had a taste in the majors. His defense isn't great, so he's more of a backup. That's why he's lower than Agustin Ramirez, who could maybe run with it by the second half of the season. And then number 10, I was kind of torn. There are some options like Davis and De Los Santos, Moises Ballesteros of the Cubs, who I mentioned earlier, even Marcelo Meyer. But I went with Nick York of the Pirates. I hope he's still eligible. You'll probably tell me he's not. He was up last year. He did pretty well. You know, he's kind of fighting with Nick Gonzalez, but I kind of think Nick York will still get 300 to 400 plate appearances, and they'll be pretty pretty productive, I think. So that was my top 10 of hitters.
Yeah, I actually like the way that you list that out. I'd maybe be a little lower on Cuero. Have my questions on Agustin Ramirez. I do agree on York and kind of being in there. Love DeLauder if he's healthy. Like the gamble on Christian Moore. I think there's a good chance he could potentially be up pretty quickly. And I agree. If I'm going in and looking at strictly 2025, I'm more likely to buy in that Campbell breaks camp with the team and then Anthony is up sometime during the summer and maybe gets a little more time at AAA. I think that's a possibility for sure. And I can see him being really productive, stealing some bases, etc. And there's a big hole there, I think, at second base for them too, potentially. So I think that all fits in perfectly. We'll see. As we start to dive into this a little bit more, I might have some other names in 6 through 10. There's no easy slam dunks here for sure. I think Jason Dominguez is maybe one that, you know, if he's healthy, there's a possibility he finds himself into that outfield, depending upon who resigns and who doesn't, what trades they make. Maybe Dominguez ends up in somebody else's outfield. I think that's certainly a possibility too. But yeah, this is really good. Like the list, like the conversations here. Good strategy talk and diving in on some prospect rankings very early in the ranking season. We just started our ranking season over at BA. We released the Braves top 10 today. I believe it's the Mets top 10 that hits the site. But either way, NL East is underway. We'll have a new list all week long. Thanks for tuning in. This has been another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.
Cheers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.